Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Ease podcast for October the 31st, 2022. This is a midweek bonus episode and the sixth of our series of special infrastructure. On today's show, we are pleased to be joined by Andreas Lips, President and CEO of Shell Recharge Solutions for the Americas and Asia. I'm Dominic Chioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, from the Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. Kyle Connor may be joining us shortly from Out of Spec Studios. Before we get going, though, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe. Oh, and he's right here. There we go. So, right, before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to our channel and ring that bell icon so you don't miss any of these special episodes or our weekly Friday show, for that matter. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome, everybody. I'm glad you could join us this morning.
Hey, Dom.
All right. So today's episode is the sixth in a series of midweek bonus podcasts centered on charging infrastructure. So we've been talking to people from different companies associated with electric vehicle charging, trying to get a sense of where we're at now and where we want to be in the future, and what are the challenges and opportunities involved with this. So Andreas, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are the president and CEO of Shell Recharge Solutions. So you've been at Shell Recharge for about 8 months now, I believe,
at this position, because
I believe you were CEO of Greenlots previous to this.
Yes.
And you can explain how that worked, changing from Greenlots to Shell Recharge, or if there is a change. As I was saying, you've been involved with the Shell electrification effort for several years. So to start off, maybe tell us about Shell Recharge Solutions' story. Like, how is it that an energy company known for pumping oil that's powered transportation for over 100 years is getting into the electricity business, as it becomes the prime type of energy that moves us around over the next decade or two? So lay out for us, if you can, the company's like business model and strategy to gain significant market share.
Yeah, very, very happy to do so. And I also can clarify the issue, what is Greenlots for the Shell Recharge solution. So very happy to do that. Before I do so, I want to just appreciate and say thank you for all of you for inviting me to this webcast. I watched a couple of the other previous episodes. I think they're really great, insightful as well. So I'm really grateful to be here with you today as well to tell a little bit about Shell Recharge Solutions, as you already outlined. So basically, maybe if I start a little bit earlier with Shell, what we have been doing. So in 2016, we created within the Shell Group a business unit which was called at that stage Shell New Energies. And business unit, we looked at all the, say, new energies or the new solutions for customers that are coming into market and started to invest in hydrogen and wind and solar and also in EV charging. And our first investment back in 2017 was in a company in Europe, which is called New Motion, headquartered in Amsterdam, focusing on providing charging solutions to businesses. And then later in 2019, we acquired a company here in the US, headquarters in Los Angeles, and that was Greenlots. Well, Greenlots already had also over 10 years of experience in EV charging, and Shell acquired that company in 2019. And in that year also, I had the opportunity to become the CEO of Greenlots, and I moved with my family from Europe over here to the US. To lead Greenlots into its next phase of growth. And then what we did this year, actually in March 2022, we unified basically both Greenlots and its European counterpart New Motion under a single brand, which is now Shell Recharge Solutions. And that's a little bit the origin story, so to say, what Shell Recharge Solutions is, because we really want to bring Shell's regional electric charging solutions under one identity, and then helping basically to further deliver then EV charging solutions under one ecosystem to the different customers that we are serving. That is really the idea. And as you might know, the Shell brand is very, very strong globally. So we feel also that it conveys a lot of trust to customers. And with the power of the Shell brand, we believe that we can really drive electrification forward as people will see, oh, even an energy company like Shell is now investing in EV charging. So this is not a fashion, this is here to stay. And with the power of the brand, I believe we can bring more customers or more drivers in the commercial and in the private space to make the switch to an electric vehicle. And that's exactly what we are doing. Shell Recharge Solutions is really like a technology and service provider. We provide a full turnkey EV infrastructure solutions to businesses. And when I say full turnkey is we can do everything from the selection of the appropriate hardware, all to the installation of the hardware, the project design, and then also the operation and maintenance of the EV charging solution. At the core of all that is our industry-leading charge point management software, which is called Shell Sky, that is basically operating in the hardware on behalf of our customers.
Right. So there are a number of different charging networks in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Now, with more on the way. So is Shell Recharge going to have like a retail footprint?
We have already today, and many people don't know that at a global scale, take a step away from the Americas for a moment, you're already operating more than 100,000 chargers globally, and in all different use cases, in the residential space, on the go, so public charging, at retail forecourts, but also at destinations, and increasingly also in for fleet businesses, where we see a tremendous growth in the recent months. As well. In the US, we operate at the moment about 40 Shell branded charge points at our retail footprint, and we're investing heavily in that space to grow that further. And we also help other big customers actually to electrify as well. So let it be fleet customers like Penske or FedEx. You might have seen the recent announcement. We are working with Uber to electrify, to create some public charging points. We are working with the city of LA to both electrify their fleets, but also provide charging in the public space. So our core customer segments are really, first of all, businesses. So we are not in the B2C area, so not direct to the consumer. If you, Dominic, wants to have a charger at your home in your driveway, we would not be the right partner to do that today. But if you would have like a big fleet or a big retail business that you want to electrify, then you would be our ideal customer, so to say. And we're expanding in all these customer journeys, really following where customers need charging in the first place, where we see a gap in the market, and that's where we're putting our strengths at play. Really.
So there are several large EV charging, DC fast charging networks already sort of established. So what do you expect your future market position to be in regards to those and maybe other newcomers coming into the market?
Well, our ambition clearly is to be one, if not the global leader in EV charging in the future. So we are planning to invest heavily in EV charging and public charging certainly is a big focus area for us as well. So we will expand our network in the Americas quite tremendously in the next couple of years, as we do also in other markets like in Europe or in Asia as well. And we believe that we have the firepower to do so. We have the right background to do so. We are actually the biggest retail forecourt network in the US today. We have almost 15,000 sites in the US, so we are the market leader in that. And that is a footprint that will help us working with these wholesalers of us to actually help them electrify their forecourts and provide convenient charging to drivers. What we are very good at traditionally is to select the right locations where traffic flows go, where people need to fill up their gas tanks today or recharge their vehicles, their batteries in the future. So that is a footprint that we certainly can leverage to quite some extent to deploy charging infrastructure. On top of that, the brand obviously will help us as well. One of the challenges we often see with charging infrastructure is that it's very small. And people who, of course, drive an EV, they know exactly how they look like, they know how to look for it, and they find chargers. But many people who do not drive EVs, they don't really know how these charging stations look like, and they don't see them. So there are already today many more charging stations out there than people actually perceive and know. And we believe by leveraging our brand and our footprint, we can actually make charging more visible for everybody, which again will increase people's perception that EV charging is here to stay and that there are chargers everywhere, which makes then it easier for many people to do the switch to electric vehicles because they know they can actually charge their vehicles as well. So that is really an important part where the power of the brand really comes into play. On top of that, Shell already has also a very strong Shell fleet solutions business. So we are serving millions of fleet customers across the world. We are the number one with a branded fuel card service for businesses. And again, these customers are slowly transitioning to EVs. They often don't do that from, say, if they have like 100 fleet vehicles, they will not switch all 100 vehicles from one day to the other to EV. That's a gradual shift. So we can actually accompany our customers on that journey by helping them installing the first chargers, helping them understand which routes or which vehicles to electrify first, and then accompanying them through the journey from an internal combustion engine to an EV. And that is really the power that we have as an energy company to offer solutions for customers throughout the energy transition.
Right on. Hey, Kyle or Tom, did you have a question that you want to end?
Well, I think, you know, we've heard a lot about what Shell's really good at, and a huge thanks to you for coming on the show. It's pretty amazing, but really curious as to where you think the big opportunities for you to improve. Obviously, my take on this space is it's getting hugely congested. Every company wants to be the market leader in charging. Where do you think is, you know, the biggest improvements that Shell Recharge could make in terms of capturing even more market share? Because again, you do have a lot of those back-end systems already in place today.
I believe, as I outlined already a little bit, so big improvement is A, the perception of EV charging, having it accessible to everybody. I think the Shell brand is one of the most powerful brands in the world in the energy space, and showcasing basically that we are all in will help basically customers to trust that EV charging is reliable. And when I talk about reliability, that's, I think, the second biggest part. Today, still, many chargers out there, they're often not working. If you follow, like, the news or if you're following the notes on Twitter and all the different channels, many customers are still complaining about that, oh, yeah, I got to the station and it's not working, or I can't get my vehicle to charge. And that's another area where we at Shell Recharge Solutions put a lot of effort there. Our brand is our most valuable asset that we have. So our role, or my role specifically, is really also to protect the brand. So we cannot allow for our brand actually to be perceived with chargers not working. So we are investing heavily into the reliability of our charging network, where we put our brand there, so that that customers actually have an experience that is as easy and convenient as they have in the traditional internal combustion engine world. And that is certainly another area where we can provide a lot of support. You see in the background here, that's actually our innovation center in the heart of Los Angeles, where we really have like tens of different chargers and charging infrastructure and vehicles where we test throughout for really all of the chargers that we install on our software with different vehicles to really make sure that the chargers work once they're out there in the wild. At the same time, what we're offering, we call it a Sky Care. We offer an O&M program with an uptime guarantee of up to 98% to our B2B customers, where we provide basically preventive maintenance via our software, but also physical preventive maintenance. We hold inventory ourselves now so that we can go out there and fix charging infrastructure as quickly as possible if something happens. EV charging is a little bit complex, more complex as people perceive. While on one side, it's just an electrical outlet that there flows energy to, but it's connected, especially if you talk about smart charging, you also have hardware, firmware, and software interacting together. And that's happening at the charging point, but also, of course, in the vehicle and then in the cloud software. So any change in any of these three can actually make your charging network to have a glitch. And we had that, we experienced that quite a few times before, where a hardware manufacturer might have updated their firmware on the charger, and suddenly the whole network did not work anymore. So we are really working very closely now with our hardware suppliers to make sure that before any updates, either on our software or on the firmware of the chargers, is being deployed, to ensure that it still continues to work. So reliability is certainly another area where we feel we can add a lot of value. And last but not least, it's just the scale. I mean, as I mentioned already, we have the number one network here in the US in terms of retail footprint. That is a huge scale that we can bring to the table in terms of locations. We are also serving about globally, we have 55,000 retail stations in the world. That is quite a footprint that we can leverage to provide EV charging infrastructure to drivers all across the world. And that is certainly something that people will need in the future.
So I guess two questions from my side. From the reliability standpoint, no question, glad to hear that it's your top priority. It's our top annoyance is when we roll up to a charger and it doesn't work, which I do a lot of EV road tripping, have done for years. And in my impression, networks are getting less reliable and more issues as more chargers go in. And so what's different about the hardware that you're putting in or the software that you're putting in that will make Shell Recharge's network more reliable than competitors? Because you don't have your own proprietary hardware that you're building in-house. You're buying the same type of chargers from Tritium, ABB, BTC, whoever, all the suppliers that everyone else is. What makes this possibly 98% uptime where other, let's say, hardware providers or network providers, I should say, are struggling, in my perception, to reach 50 or 70% uptime?
Yeah. So what happened in the past often is that e-mobility became very fashionable. So, and then there were providers who just sold basically the EV charging vision to their customers, installed chargers at their premises. And then, but there were not enough cars out there yet. So I have an electric motorbike, and the dealer is here just across the street here in Venice. And they have four chargers on their lot there. And I think they sold probably only four of their electric motorbikes. I never saw anybody charging there. So what happens then if you are like the retailer and you're buying the hardware from somebody, you never see a customer charging, eventually you stop maintaining those, because the maintenance also has, of course, a cost component. And what often happened is that people install chargers, or some competitors of ours that sold charging solutions to retailers in the world, told them a story about charging infrastructure. They have not been used, so they stopped maintaining them. And then if there's a fault, then nobody really cares. But then you, as an EV driver, you feel these annoyances. We are selecting our footprint a lot more careful. We install chargers where actually charging infrastructure is needed. And we do that actually by also allowing our customers to jump on the bandwagon of SkyCare, where we guarantee that footprint. If we put our brand on there, we cannot allow that people go there and half of the chargers are not working, because that would jeopardize our brand, and that would also not help the industry. If you feel that chargers are not working, you might reconsider buying an EV next time around, because you say, hey, I can't charge my vehicle. So that's really a key component for us at the moment to make sure that our network is working as well as possible. And it's quite interesting. When I came into my role, I met a lot of our customers, and I myself had the vision of, you have to be very innovative and think about energy management things, maybe wireless charging, all kinds of fancy things. And when I talked to our customers, they only said one thing to me: Andreas, just make sure that the chargers work every time at scale. And that is really the number one priority that our customers communicate to us over and over again. And that's what we are really, really working very hard on. Energy management, I mentioned this, will become very important as well in the future when the EV penetration goes up. But it's not the number one critical point today, because today it's really just make the chargers work every time I go there, so that I feel confident to go there. So with a nice vehicle, of course, even in the worst case, if you are stranded and you run out of petrol, you can actually put petrol in a little canister, walk somewhere, take an Uber to go to the next gas station. They're everywhere. Fill it up, come back to your car, and off you go. With an EV, the situation is completely different, right? So you cannot like bring a battery quickly to your vehicle. So it's a lot more critical for drivers to always have enough battery power, and range anxiety is really an issue. And I myself, I drive an electric vehicle. I have two little kids that I'm driving around with my electric vehicle. And so I cannot foresee a scenario where I'm running out of power, air conditioning not working anymore, and I have two little kids screaming in the back of my car. So really reliable infrastructure is our number one priority. And we put our name behind it to increase the reliability.
Andreas, so yeah. You mentioned a few times about the large footprint that Shell has, and that's undoubtable, you know, throughout the world. You know, we've heard Europe say that they're going to, you know, discontinue allowing new ICE sales past 2035. We've seen states, California, do that. That's a short time period. That's really not long from now. So I would imagine within the company, you're already having conversations about some sort of a transition. Now, if there are bans on internal combustion engine, there's still going to be millions of internal combustion engine vehicles on the road for many years driving. So it's not like you'll just shut off all the gas stations in 2035. But you'll obviously need to begin to reduce the number of them. Do you have internal plans? Are you discussing changing these sites from gas stations to electric vehicle charging stations? Are you going to begin sort of mixing in, the high speed chargers at these locations and reducing the number of pumps? Is there a plan, like say 8 years from now, to all new stations will have, you know, 6 electric vehicle DC fast chargers and 4 pumps, and then that's going to phase out? I would imagine a smart company would already be putting this in motion. You have the real estate, which is the toughest thing for these infrastructure companies. Talk to Electrify America, talk to ChargePoint, talk to all the companies. The biggest problem is getting that real estate. You already have it, so you have a huge advantage. Could you tell us, is that in the works? And if so, give us a little insight on what we can expect to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are looking, of course, very closely to our footprint, and we monitor where actually electric vehicles are being sold, where their journey takes them. So there's a lot of data in the industry available, and we install charging stations where customers need it. To your point of changing our footprint, it is already happening. So it is a little bit happening quicker in China and in Europe, but we're already installing charging infrastructure at retail stations here in the US. What we did in Europe, and it might be worthwhile Googling that if you look for Shell Fulham, we converted actually in the heart of London an old gas station where there was a gas station infrastructure. We converted it into a fully EV charging hub where we don't sell any gas anymore, but have several high-speed charging stations there. We have a Shell Cafe there as well, a lounge for customers to enjoy free Wi-Fi, etc. And we converted basically an old gas station into a charging hub. And that's a fantastic footprint that we have in the heart of London. And we see one of our highest, actually, utilization rates for chargers at this forecourt in London. So we are already doing that today. The speed at which we're doing that depends really on the speed of our customers and how they electrify. So we are monitoring very closely the use of gasoline, of course, and our footprint. And as well, we are monitoring the demand for EV charging. And then the power of data helps us to plan this throughoutfully. But we have certainly very big plans for EV charging. But we also believe, as you rightly say, even if you stop selling ICE vehicles in 2035, many of these vehicles will still be on the road for quite some while. And we want to provide energy solutions to our customers that they need so that they can go on with their journeys. So we will also continue with our traditional business for quite a while as customers need it. And the last point, as we are a global energy company, it's also important to recognize that different countries go at different speeds as well. We are active in more than 80 countries. And again, we want to provide the right energy solutions to our customers in all of these scenarios and help them basically towards a net zero world. But you have to also go at the speed of governments and individual consumers and businesses can go as well. But you're absolutely right. We believe that we have a great advantage by giving the footprint that we already have, giving the brand that we have, and the firepower we can put behind this technology. And as Shell Recharge Solutions, with a very strong footprint in Europe, 28 markets, and in North America, we are poised to become a leading charging solutions provider in the world at the global scale.
Okay, so in short, will we begin? Because I've seen my Shell Recharge stations in you know, out here in public in the U.S., but I haven't really seen many of them at Shell stations, gas stations. You know, I've seen them in other locations that give some in New York State that I've seen in the Evolve program. But I'm waiting for Shell or Exxon or, you know, the big companies to start, you know, putting in a few at their gas station. Now, some people say that I don't want to sit around a gas station for 40 minutes or half an hour or whatever to charge. It's, you know, I'd like to be at a nice, pleasant, say, convenience store. But a lot of the locations do have little mini marts where you can go and use the restroom, make a purchase, get a cup of coffee or whatever. You know, am I going to start seeing more at Shell gas stations soon? Because I currently don't. I see the Shell Recharge out in the wild, but not really at your stations. Is that going to happen more?
It is going to happen more and more. So we are working, of course, with our partners, our wholesalers, who operate these stations to really help them install charging infrastructure at those sites. So I can certainly say you will see a lot more of those. I'm not able to share the exact plans. Now we already have about 40 stations that have charging infrastructure at forecourts, and I expect many, many more in the near future. Absolutely. What we are focusing on really is really public charging on the go. So that means at our forecourts or similar footprints. And the other focus area for the public charging part is really also in the destination space. So you can also expect a lot more charging infrastructure at places where people go to do something else than filling up their car. So think about shopping malls, gyms, cinemas, other retailers, etc., where we also put a lot of focus on installing charging infrastructure as well. This is certainly important. And then, of course, in the fleet space, where we see more and more big fleets really starting to electrify.
Andreas, question for you. I think just more broad speaking, you're mentioning, you know, we have a huge market share in the U.S. I personally have never been to a charger in America that's branded as Shell, but you run a lot of the back end software on these chargers. And so can you explain, you know, what chargers, like when are our viewers interacting with your product? How would they know that they're at a Shell Recharge backed station?
You're right. Today, and traditionally, the business model from Shell Recharge Solutions prior Greenlots really to be in the background. You know? So we are at the heart, a technology company, a software company that helped other businesses to electrify their networks. So say a big fleet, a utility, a city, they want to build their own branded network, but they don't have the capabilities to do so. So Shell Recharge Solutions would help them to design, install, and operate their chargers with the customer's brand on it. No? And there would be just a little label on the front where it says Shell Recharge Solutions or powered by Shell Recharge Solutions. And we would do that. Increasingly, though, our main customers internally will be Shell itself, you know, providing basically a Shell branded footprint overall. Today, what you can already do if you want to know where our chargers are, we have a mobile app that you can download, Shell Recharge, where you can see basically, you can select all the chargers from the different networks in that app. And you can filter by Shell Recharge Solutions, obviously our own network, but we also have roaming agreements with some of the other big providers like EVgo, ChargePoint, Flow, so to provide access to even more chargers in the US. But that would be the easiest way to identify the current Shell Recharge network. And at the same time, we will actually increase our own footprint with Shell branded stations tremendously in North America in the next years to come so that people really see the charging stations everywhere. So it's a little bit like the traditionally we focused more on helping our customers to electrify, and now we are really fully engaged in electrifying our own footprint as well, and putting our brand out there, because we just believe that that's where we can add a lot of value and convenience actually to drivers.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. That's great. I think my last question here is, when someone rolls up to a Shell branded station, potentially at one of your own stations, what hardware are they going to use? What power levels are you targeting, and how will they be able to pay for it? Is it credit card activation, or is it RFID, or is it an app? Because in America, RFID hasn't taken off. We've also seen a trend towards much higher power here in America now, especially with those two vehicles, in that photo behind you, the Lightning and the Rivian needing, 500 amp capable chargers each. Are we going to see some big boy chargers at your spots?
No, absolutely. So maybe talking about the hardware first, your first question. We do not actually have our own proprietary hardware. We are not a hardware manufacturer. And simply because we don't believe that we can provide sustainable competitive advantage in hardware manufacturing. There are other players out there who have done that for many, many years, and they're much better at scale doing that to providing reliable hardware. On top of that, if you're actually flexible to accept and be able to work with different hardware providers, that also allows you to circumvent some of the supply chain challenges that the market currently sees. So we can actually leverage basically different suppliers to have better access to hardware, but also better access to innovation. Many of these players continue to innovate, and given that our software is flexible and compliant with the Open Charge Alliance protocols, we can use different hardware and therefore access different technologies and follow where the innovation goes. So we work with all of the leading hardware manufacturers really doing that, and we work very closely to them. Again, our scale gives us an advantage there. In terms of the power levels, the fastest ones we're installing currently are 360 kilowatt for chargers. We see the majority today still like in the 175 space, but certainly it increased a lot in the recent years. Just 3 years ago, everybody was talking, we install 50 kilowatt everywhere at the charging stations, and today that's already considered too slow because people expect a much faster experience of charging. And as you rightly say, the vehicles are starting to become bigger and bigger. That also means bigger batteries, obviously, and so a faster charger is required. And you see that ABB, Phihong, they're already offering close to 400 kilowatt now in their charging infrastructure. So I expect that trend to continue. Of course, that trend has also other challenges, and that's mainly cost and access or upgrade of the electricity grid. As you know, a 350 kilowatt charger is a lot more expensive from the charge point itself, but also the infrastructure needed to actually install that charger, the power needed at the site to have that. So there's also a big cost component that we have to consider to make it the optimal way. What I'm expecting really is that there will be a balancing act in the future, which is between the power levels and the typical dwell time of a user has at the different locations. Now, if you are really on the go, you're making your road trip, you have a lot less dwell time. You just stop to charge, maybe get a coffee, and you want to go off your way. So expect really high power charging in those scenarios. In a destination space where people stay an hour or sometimes even longer at a big shopping mall, a cinema, etc., I do expect that charging infrastructure will be a little bit slower. So to actually balance it out with the typical dwell time at that location. And that's where you also see a lot of level two charging still playing an important role in this world. If you're talking about on-street charging, for example, or residential charging, and also in many fleet scenarios, level two charging still has a role to play. If vehicles are not being used at night, it's a perfect case to use level two charging there. So it really depends in the end of the use case and the typical dwell time of the vehicle. My prediction would be that charging will happen where vehicles stand anyway. know, and already today, and many people know that, vehicles are one of the less used assets that people actually have. Now, it's quite an expensive asset usually, the second highest expense after your house. No, but 96% of the time, it's actually standing still. It's not being used. So that's actually not a very high utilization for such an expensive asset. But that also provides a great opportunity to use that asset for other purposes, for charging, first of all, but also then if you see a scenario where 20, 30, 50, 80% of the vehicles are electrified, if you have access to those mobile batteries, so to say, there are many other business models that come into play, and also opportunities to help the grid to balance actually its energy need. So already today, I'm living here in Los Angeles in California, if there's a hot day and everybody switches on the AC, already today the grid has actually constraints and you have rolling blackouts. So imagine now a world where everybody drives an EV and they all charge at the same time. There are huge challenges still coming to us, and software and access to these chargers or these batteries will be one of the solutions to circumvent these challenges that we are seeing.
Right. So the U.S. has been kind of slow to electrify the transport compared to some other, you know, Europe or China, Norway in particular is like super fast. And charging networks are extremely capital intensive to roll out. Mm-hmm. But speed, it seems like we're reaching a point here where our cars are being electrified faster than the infrastructure is being put into place. So, you know, there's a real shortage of charging stations at the moment. It seems like that's the impression. It all depends on, you know, the exact locations, but certainly California has a lot of traffic. Even my local one here sometimes gets filled up. So in our minds, at least, Shell has like vast resources, and we think that we could probably flood the country with charging facilities, you know, if it really wanted to do. So what is keeping Shell from kind of doing that? Does it see profits from this business as too slim to pursue at like at a multi-billion dollar level? Or does it want to see its growth tied to profitability in some ways? Or are there other factors involved with the speed of your rollout?
I say that we are speeding up. So we're increasingly actually deploying charging infrastructure. We follow the customer. But already today, as I said, we have over 100,000 charge points at a global level installed, and we really follow our customers where they electrify quicker, we deploy more charging infrastructure. Of course, as a company like Shell, we look at the profitability and utilization of these assets as well. And interestingly enough, the ones where you really go full in have the highest utilization. I mentioned the site in Fulham where you showed the photo recently. That is one of the highest utilization rates that we see in our entire network, because we provide exactly what the EV driver wants. It's a fantastic opportunity. So we expect a lot more investment in that space, in line basically with what customers demand and where customers electrify. So you can expect a lot more investments from the Shell Group in charging infrastructure. And at the same time, in the fleet space, we see a massive growth opportunity where big fleets increasingly announce that they want to electrify a significant part or sometimes all their fleet within the next 5 to 10 years as well. You see the announcement from Amazon, Penske, FedEx, Uber, Hertz. Many really big fleets are really jumping on the bandwagon, and we will be here to help them on that journey. Absolutely.
All right.
So let me grab one.
Sure.
Dom. Yeah. So Andreas, as far as level 2 home charging, You do provide, or Shell at least license their name to Sky Intelligent for a level 2 dual voltage home charging. Is that something that you're going to get into more in the future with providing home charging equipment or selling home charging equipment? You currently have that one unit that's out there, but tell us a little bit about the plans to maybe go into the home charging market or not.
Yeah. So today in Europe, we have quite a lot of our business customers who charge their vehicles at home. So think leasing customers or big taxi fleets, etc. So where we provide a home charging solution. In the US, we don't do that at this stage. So we don't have a residential program here in the US. we really focus more on the public charging space in North America, as well as on the fleet charging space, as I already mentioned. We believe, again, that that is where we really can add value, given our footprint that we have, given the brand that we have, given also the experience we built in Greenlots and our Shell Recharge Solutions, which played a lot more in the public charging space. And that's also where we see basically the biggest challenges today. As we already mentioned, reliability is a challenge, access to a network, sufficient charging infrastructure is a bottleneck in the public charging space. So that's really where we're focusing on to drive the overall industry forward. So right now we do not have a plan to enter the residential market here in North America, but you can expect a lot more investment in the public on the go and fleet space, actually.
Okay, but you currently do sell a home charging solution. I have it here in the garage. So are you going to not sell that anymore, or?
That is a licensed product of ours, where we basically license our brand to a hardware manufacturer who's selling that blue charging cable you're referring to. Obviously, what we do is we select our partners very carefully and work with them on quality standards, safety standards, to ensure that the hardware is actually working, which is of course important. But it's a licensed product where we not plan to actually expand that to a great extent. If we see opportunities to license our brand, where our brand can help to help customers electrify, we are very happy to do so. But again, for our own charging infrastructure investment, where we are focusing on, that will be a lot more on building out networks for our customers, for ourselves, and for fleets in the public and destination and fleet space.
So agreements with automakers are sometimes thought to be key to charging network success, as well as removing friction points and making the fast charging experience easier than traditional fuel pumps. Are you working with OEMs now on implementing simplification technologies like plug and charge?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned already, it's really three components that have to work together. It's the hardware, the charging infrastructure hardware. It is the vehicle, actually. And it's also the software backend. And all three have to really seamlessly work together to be able to get to a reliability of 95-98%. So we are very closely working with auto OEMs to test their vehicles on our chargers, on our network here in LA or in other locations throughout the world as well, to really make that happen. So you see two vehicles, of course, in the background here, but we regularly have different vehicles in our innovation center here in LA, all the way up to class A trucks that we can actually test on our network to make sure that the charging infrastructure, software, and the vehicles really seamlessly work together. OEMs or car manufacturers are really a critical part on this journey, and they're all ramping up as well. So we expect actually our collaboration with these partners to increase over time as well. And again, we feel that we have actually a very good position in this space. Many of these OEMs are already customers of ours for our traditional businesses in the lubricant space, in the fuel space. We work traditionally very closely with car manufacturers, and we want to leverage that relationship that has been nurtured for decades in part to actually help them also to make the switch. For auto OEMs, it's also a huge transition away from the traditional ICE vehicles to electric vehicles. And together with the power of the scale that the auto OEMs and the energy companies can bring, we believe that we can make it easier for customers to go there. You mentioned plug and charge, ISO 15118. We certainly work on these technologies with auto OEMs in our different innovation centers. It is often software-driven as well, where we have really our key competency. So that is certainly something that drivers expect, you know? And also something that we want to provide to our drivers and users of our network as quickly as possible. It's certainly a big focus area for us as well.
You mentioned briefly Class 8 trucks. Does Shell Recharge have any plans for a truck-specific network? Because we're thinking they're going to need like megawatt chargers, basically. So, you know, huge power levels and spaces they can drive up to and through no problem. Yeah. I saw actually an issue for pull through sites for a regular retail, you know, DC fast charging places, people who are pulling trailers. But at least for the truck part of that, what kind of timeline are you looking at, or are you looking at it all, like putting in your own Shell Recharge trucking infrastructure, fast charge infrastructure?
First of all, we are looking at it already today, so mm-hmm. that we need to provide solutions for the medium duty up to heavy duty vehicles as well. As I said, we are testing these vehicles already today in mm-hmm. our innovation center. We are already also researching into megawatt charging that you just mentioned, because for these really big vehicles, you need different charging infrastructure. That's also something we're looking at it. The pace, of course, is a little bit slower than it is in the passenger vehicle car. The vehicles are just not on the road there, but I would expect that as, again, the demand for these charging solutions goes up, that we will be ready to help there. And it's today sometimes even a safety issue that you have to have different solutions. We have a little WhatsApp group in our business, and just last week somebody shared a photo where a class 6 truck was actually charging at one of our retail stations in Europe, was like standing diagonal, occupied like five parking spots and charging this truck, which of course made us first of all smile to see actually this big vehicle just fitted under the canopy there at a charger. But it's certainly something we have to and will look into as more and more vehicle types actually electrify in the future. Absolutely.
Right. There's definitely a chicken and egg problem here with, you know, you don't want to put stuff out too early because that's a lot, you know, a lot of money, a lot of capital, you know, kind of wasted. But then on the other hand, you don't want people to not electrify their fleets because there's not infrastructure already available for them. So it's like it's a balancing act, I suppose, that you have to decide where to.
What we see the first in the fleet space or the heavier duty space, what we see, the first vehicles to electrify are those that actually have the range for their use case. So we see a lot of drayage trucks or trucks with fixed routes that are already now actually electrifying at stage. We're actually participating in a pilot with Volvo Trucks, Volvo Lights projects here in LA, where we have charging infrastructure at the port as well as some fleet depots in the greater LA area, and where actually there are fixed routes where the electric trucks can go to within the range of that vehicle and then charge overnight again. So that is something where people are experimenting today with trucks on the road. And here in LA, you also see increasingly FedEx has their BrightDrop vehicles driving around, increasingly Amazon, their vans. It's not trucks, it's like really like the vans now, but we see the cars on the road already. So I expect that it happens a little bit more gradual. The fleet customers will first electrify basically the routes that they can serve with a single charge, you know, and then charge at the different depots that they already have, and that makes it a little bit easier. And as then both vehicles become more available, battery technically will become more reliable, but also more affordable. Over time, different vehicle classes will electrify, which will make it then important to have the right charging infrastructure as well. Mm-hmm. Some of that infrastructure is already being deployed today, because again, if I look at the trucks that I have here in the background, many people expect in America to put their trailer in the back or their boat, etc., making long road trips. You already need like a much bigger footprint for parking and charging. Yeah. For those types of vehicles, so we are certainly planning for that, and I do expect that the whole industry will provide a lot more a mosaic of different charging solutions for different vehicle types, different use cases, to allow customers actually to charge the vehicles they need to charge in the future. Right. Absolutely.
Kyle, did you have another question?
No, I'm pretty pretty good here. I mean, I think it's interesting to watch the whole thing roll out. It's going to be a bit of a competition in my eyes as to the back end software of running your own network versus your, competitors in this case, but competing charging networks that will also be running your back end software. I wonder how that will play out into the future. I'm sure some careful negotiations will have to be had there, but wish you the best of luck.
So I'll grab one, Dom.
Sure.
So Andreas, What do you say to the, let's say, the naysayers when they hear that Shell or Exxon or a big oil company is getting involved in electric vehicle charging? Because we've seen it. We've seen it in the forums. You know, the last place I want to see is the last companies I want to see installing these are oil companies, because they're going to put out bad equipment that doesn't work. They're going to want to discourage people from driving EVs and show that they're you know, the golden goose, which is oil, that's what's making you all these billions of dollars, is still better than EV charging. So maybe make your case for why somebody would trust a Shell or an Exxon or any of the oil companies out there to provide us with reliable, fast charging that makes electric vehicles more attractive.
Yeah, I'm very happy to do so. I mean, I cannot talk to the competition, of course, but I can talk about Shell. Shell is really an energy company. Huh? So we provide, we are already in the US one of the biggest power sellers in the whole of the US. I think we are number three or number five. So we are actually much more than say an oil company. We are really like an energy company, and we are looking at it from through the lens of the customer. We want to provide reliable energy solutions to customers, and customers are in different stages of their transition. Our strategy clearly says that by 2050, the strategy is called Power in Progress, we want to become a net zero company, and we are investing millions, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars into that goal, and we will get there. I'm absolutely convinced of that. And EV charging is a big part of that journey, but we're also investing in hydrogen, in biofuels. We're one of the biggest biofuels producers in the world. We're investing in solar, in onshore and offshore wind, in all the technologies that help us to become a net zero company and to provide actually a solution to climate change in the long run. What we have, as I said already, we have the power of our brand. People trust our brand. In many, many countries in the world, we have a focus on safety. We have a focus on overall providing a great customer experience. And we have the scale and the balance sheet actually to make it happen at scale. And we believe that that is actually what's needed to help customers through the energy transition. I hear a lot of more naysayers actually talking about, oh, charging infrastructure is not reliable. There's not enough charging infrastructure out there. Or my car actually doesn't have enough range. And that is where Shell can actually provide a solution. We can make charging more accessible for everyone, installing chargers at scale. We already have 100,000 out there. We can actually make charging infrastructure reliable, and we can communicate to our brand that that it's safe and convenient to charge at our stations, and that will actually bring more people to an electric vehicle to help us actually become a net zero business by 2050. So I'm actually very convinced and very, very proud actually of the work we are doing in this space, and it will only be more. It is a transition, and we are fully behind that transition as an energy company.
So here's a question that we've been asking everybody out that's come on these infrastructure shows. So how do you select station locations? Like, what are the priorities in terms of amenities, proximity to major roads, utility hookup access, and all that? But on top of that, do Shell station owners or managers have, or if they want a DC fast charging on their property, is there an established process for that to happen, for those placement decisions, or are those placement decisions made at the corporate level?
Yeah, so we work very closely with our retailers or wholesalers actually to provide them with the charging infrastructure that they need. Obviously, as Shell Recharge Solutions, we have a lot of experience in that space, and we also do like quite kind of consulting or project management for them. So we look at them at their footprint, what is the power available, what is the overall parking lot situation there, and helps them to select the right solution for their specific location. So there is absolutely a process in place. What we see, it's we don't mandate for our wholesalers exactly what kind of convenience they have to have there, but of course we make recommendations. And what we can see is the more amenities are at the site, the more actually the drivers come and stay and charge for longer. As I mentioned already, the site in Fulham has basically a full suite of products. It's only chargers, only high power chargers, and it has a little lounge, it has free Wi-Fi, it has like a great Shell Select convenience store in there as well. And people actually spend time there. And we have the highest utilization rates in our network at exactly that site. And from that point of view, we can also learn and see how people are charging, what they need, so that we can deploy that at scale at other locations. How we do that, we are a pretty data-driven company in the end. If you have a footprint of over 100,000 chargers live already, that provides you quite a lot of data to be able to compare what sites work best, what do we have on those sites, and then we do more of what works good and less of what's not working so well, so that our network actually becomes better over time.
All right. Tom, do you have another question? All right, I can wrap it up.
Yeah, no, I think we covered most what we needed to cover here. And Andreas, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. This was great insight for our followers.
A couple of things real quick. So first of all, I want to know what electric vehicle that you own. I know what it is, but if you have more than one, let us know about that. And also, real quickly, so we have I forget exactly, just tell us how many retail stations you have in the U.S. right now, and how many you expect to see in, say, just a year from now, maybe, what your rate of expansion is in this near term.
Okay, I'll start with the second question first. So we have actually over 13,000 retail stations in the U.S. Today. At retail stations, we have still today a very small number of charging infrastructure. As Shell Recharge Solutions, we operate about 10,000 chargers in the U.S. at different locations, but that's not only at our own sites, it's also on other sites. So about 10,000 chargers right now today. And that is a mix of level two and fast charging infrastructure, and expect that to grow tremendously. And to give you an idea of the scale that we are aiming for. So again, I'm taking a global number here. Globally, we operate about 100,000 right now. Our aim is to operate 500,000 by 2025. That's only in 3 years' time, and 2.5 million by 2030. So then you can extrapolate a little bit the growth ambitions that we have in this space, and you can expect to hear a lot more of us and see a lot more charging infrastructure out there. So that is certainly important. In the US today, we also have, as I mentioned, roaming agreements with some of the major networks. So using our Shell Recharge app, you can access about 70,000 charging stations in North America already today, providing you actually with a lot of choice of charging infrastructure out there. So again, you can expect more of that, of course, in the future, but that is what we're already doing here today. In terms of vehicles that I drive, actually, yeah, I'm a little bit of I start to become a little bit of a geek. I think in my role, obviously, you have to walk the talk. I had a Tesla first. When I moved to the US, I bought a Tesla Model Y. But I just 3 months ago, I actually took delivery of the Rivian R1T pickup truck. Since I was a little kid, actually, I wanted to have a pickup truck. You hear from my accent, I'm actually German. And in Europe or in Germany, as a private person, you don't really drive pickup trucks. Nobody has that really. So right. In the US, I had finally the opportunity to make my boyhood dream come a reality. So I'm driving the R1T. But I'm also a very happy motorbike driver. So to commute, actually, I most often use my electric Harley Davidson, the Livewire. Now, again, a little bit of a childhood dream to drive a Harley. But then given my role, of course, I had to select the Livewire fully electric motorbike. And it's a fantastic experience as well. Right. And then I have also like a electrical assist mountain bike and some other toys and gadgets where I play with, of course. But yeah, the family car is the Rivian. My personal vehicle of choice is the Harley Davidson. Both hybrid electric.
Great, that's awesome garage. That's a good like multi-car solution. I like that.
Yeah, that's great. Right on. All right, so I guess that brings us to the end of today's bonus episode. Thank you very much for joining us, Andreas. Really appreciate your time here. I understand you're a pretty busy guy and, you know, have lots to do. But if your audience has any questions or comments, you can leave them on our Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog, that's with two M's. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again on Friday. Ciao.
Great. Thank you all.